Morning. So it seems like it's been 20 years since we got ourselves into this fine predicament. 20 years that we've been coming up here to practice residential intensive retreat together. And like Miyoko, the other morning in Zazen, I found myself being, memories were coming in, a blast from the past. I was remembering lots of things from the early days when we started doing Ango up here. And I realized that if we started coming in 1998, then actually I would have come that first year. And I do remember there was preparation and packing and transportation and setting up here the way we've always done. I also remember I had no idea what a fine predicament I was getting myself into. And I think most of us didn't know what we were doing at the time. There was a lot of improvisation. I think Roshi had an idea of what we were doing, and the fruit of that is what you're experiencing right now. Most of us didn't know what we were doing, so there was a lot of sincere effort. There was a lot of beginner's mind. There was a lot of learning, actually, because there was really a lot to learn just to make everything happen. And it was a great training, great experience. I think that Joshin Sensei had her Shuso Hosen and gave her first Dharma talk in 1998, and she said it was here at Grail House. What I remember is, I remember her talk. She talked about the true woman of no rank and why the poor monk in that koan couldn't see himself and express himself when questioned by Master Rinzai. I remember, to my great surprise at the time, that I ordained here just a couple years after that. Anraku Sensei and I ordained. The clippings from the shaving ceremony are buried by a tree over there. And a year or two after that, Roshi was very sick, and virtually the entire summer Ango, she didn't leave her cabin. But most of the time, she was giving the Dharma talks every day. Nowadays, you see a different face up here every day. Back then, Roshi was giving the talks every day. I don't know how she did it. She used to give interview down in her hut, and we would line up chairs under the trees out there and wait for our turn, and there were some glorious days and nights out there. There were also some very buggy nights out there. But she would ring her little bell, and we would run down the slope and throw ourselves down on the mat outside her door and go in for interview. And this is a little aside, but I felt that all of the talks this week have been very courageous. But I was especially touched by Big Tokyu's talk about his admiration for Mr. Rogers and Ryokan, men who were so childlike and so playful with children. But I thought of that because there was a game that the children in the neighborhood played. It was called Roshi. And one of them would sit on the grass cross-legged, and then the others would run down the slope and flop themselves down in front of her. And it was very hilarious for everybody. But I remember many generations of Jukai students and many empowerment ceremonies, many Shusa Hosen ceremonies. We often did it out of doors back then. I remember once in a big tent just down the driveway where the garbage cans are now. I remember too lots of good friends who have left us or moved on since then. Some things have changed since then, other things haven't changed so much. Fortunately, there's some new blood, new generations of people to carry on the practice here. We're all older. I don't know if we're wiser. Our bodies are older. The Sangha is more mature, I think. Among the changes, we have things like podcasts and video streaming, thanks to the new generation. And I know that there are some people in South America who are following these talks. So, buenos días, saludos. Qué bien que están con nosotros en este momento. Listening to the talks at the Village Zendo in South America. So maybe Dogen was right that the ripples of our practice extend to the furthest corners of the universe. I wanted to say some thanks. I wanted to thank the people who were up here on Wednesday to do the setup. I wanted to thank the people who are doing the entire retreat, because you're really the core of this Ango. And thank everybody for pouring themselves out in their practice these days. I feel also gratitude for everyone who poured themselves out in their practice for the past 20 years up here. And I wanted to say that I feel like acknowledging all the people who have lived and died in this territory here of the Hudson River Valley. The Europeans who came here and conquered and expropriated the land and created the society that we're now a part of. And we're practicing here today because of them. And the Africans who came over here forcibly, and their descendants whose lives and labor also helped make this part of the Hudson River Valley flourish. And the native communities that peopled this land and domesticated the landscape and cultivated the land to make it bear fruit, we're also practicing here today because of them. And I'm feeling grateful for the mountains and the rivers and the sky and the earth and the woodlands and the fields which have received us so generously for the past 20 years, and acknowledge our connection to the spirits of the deceased, those who lived and died in this place over the past millennia. I've always wanted to say that, so thank you for indulging me. The talks I have really enjoyed, and they anticipated so much of what I thought to talk about today that part of me just wants to say, you know, what they said. And that's it. But when it's your turn, it's your turn. So I thought I would talk about one line in our study text, the Bendawa, that I never really noticed before. It's in the latter part of the text. It's buried in the response to question number 7. And see if we can open it up a little bit. The text, Dogen writes, "Both Shakyamuni Tathagata and Venerable Mahakashyapa were accepted and used in the practice of enlightenment. And in the same manner, the great teacher Bodhidharma and great ancestor Daikon, the sixth ancestor, were pulled and turned in the practice of enlightenment. Kaz, in his translation, says it a little differently. He says, Shakyamuni and Mahakashyapa were both fulfilled by practice within realization. Great Master Bodhidharma and Wei Nung were drawn in and turned by practice within realization. But I like this translation by Okamura and Leighton, which says that Bodhidharma and the six ancestors were pulled and turned in the practice of enlightenment. We're used to thinking about being pushed and pulled and twisted and turned in terms of our karma, right? All of our karma that we talk about each morning in the verse of repentance. That might be our ingrained, conditioned behavior that causes harm to us or to other people. Or it may be a great loss that we've sustained in our life. Or it may be a terrible diagnosis, medical diagnosis, that we've received or that a loved one has received. Or it may be what we see and what we feel when we look around at the public political scenario today. And I've been thinking about the Yokoji Monastery the past couple of days, which has been threatened with being engulfed in flames. So being pulled and turned by our karma, we're used to thinking about that, but what does it mean to be pulled and turned by our enlightenment? And I remember that Kodo Sawaki had a line I found it. He said, "We don't practice in order to get Satori. It's Satori that pulls our practice. We practice being dragged around by Satori." And so now I think I know where Kodo got that quote. So how are you pulled and dragged around by Satori, turned by enlightenment? What does that feel like for you this week? Maybe you're turned by the sound of the birds, the cawing of the crows, the trill of the hawks, by the sound of the rain falling or splashing down the side of the house. Maybe you're turned by the notes from the piano or the beats of the drum or something you taste in your bowl during oryoki. Maybe you're turned by your in-breath and your out-breath, or by a feeling in your gut or a pain in the neck or a pressure here in the chest. For me, there's a quality, the idea of being turned in Sesshin has to do with surrender. I think a big part of Sesshin practice is being turned and surrendering. And we're always being turned, even though we don't necessarily realize it. I thought we're kind of like a lump of clay spinning on a potter's wheel. And the potter is universal reality. That is the infinity of causes and conditions that shape our life. Or we're turning with the spinning globe and as we hurtle around the sun. And maybe we realize that for a minute when the sun fills the room in the morning or we see the light reflected in a pane of glass. Uchiyama Roshi had only one line of commentary about this, this line of Dogen's. He said, "To be pulled and turned means to go back to the reality of life and function on its basis." To go back to the reality of life and function on its basis. not on our basis. I think one of the important things that happens on retreat, hopefully, is that we lose control or loosen control. And the main thing that we have to loosen is the mind's death grip on reality. And it's a hard thing to learn how to do, but I think that Sesshin helps us to learn how to do it slowly. It takes many retreats. We might lose control all of a sudden on one retreat, and that can be very dramatic or exciting or scary. But it doesn't actually help us very much unless we're able to integrate that loss into our ordinary lives. So I think what we're doing here, seasoning ourselves this way, really helps with that. I find there's usually a point in session where I have to give in and let go. And it may sound strange to people who haven't done this practice, but for me, many years, what actually allowed me to let go was physical discomfort. My mind just finally had to let go. I just had to give in to my body, give in to my breath. And often I have to give up my posture as well. And that's when my experience of Sesshin or my experience of samadhi would actually deepen. And maybe if my mind weren't so complicated, it would be easier for me to do that. Could let go more lightly, I'm not sure. On this retreat, I was surprised. It took a couple of days. It usually happens much earlier, but there finally was a point where this stream of thoughts started pouring through my mind. And I started to feel this pressure in my chest. And there was really nothing I could do about it. I couldn't will myself out of it. I couldn't just drop into my hara or something. I just had to, let those thoughts keep blowing through and keep feeling that pressure right here. So in Zazen and in Sesshin and in our lives, there are different moments of awakening. And sometimes those moments are rude awakenings, the fruit of physical discomfort or maybe even misfortune. We don't know what's going to happen with Yokoji Monastery, but it's been a rude awakening to impermanence. So sometimes we need rude awakenings to come back to the reality of life and to function on its basis. And so Zazen and our Sangha and our teachers sometimes have to yank us back a little rudely. Sometimes Orioki yanks us back a little rudely, or the schedule on retreat. But how about for you? How have you been pulled and turned this week? How are you pulled and turned right now? And are you pulled and turned by your karma or by your enlightenment? Maybe we can shift our perspective a little bit and think about ourselves and our lives. Think of ourselves not just as the unfortunate victims of our karma, but as we're living out our awakening, we can see ourselves as being pulled and turned by our enlightenment. And in the end, what's really the difference between our karma and our enlightenment? And then the other side of being turned is turning the Dharma wheel. So Dogen says, when one displays the Buddha Mudra with one's whole body and mind, sitting upright in the samadhi, even for a short time, at that time, all things together awaken to supreme enlightenment and sit upright under the kingly Bodhi tree. At the same time, they turn the incomparable great Dharma wheel. Or he says, the person in Zazen and the enlightenment of all things intimately and imperceptibly assist each other. Or he says, even if only one person sits for a short time, because this Zazen is one with all existence and completely permeates all time, it performs everlasting Buddha guidance within the inexhaustible Dharma world. So it's hard to believe this from a common sense perspective. But in a way, it's logical if all of our actions are connected to and have some effect on everything else, even if that connection is very subtle, and even if that effect is imperceptible to us. So we can ask ourselves, how do we turn the Dharma in our own practice? How do we turn the world in our own practice? How do we turn our breathing? How do we turn the sound of the birds outside? How do we turn the food we eat? How do you assist the enlightenment of all things right now? So I think of that mass of clay spinning on the potter's wheel. And as it's taking shape, it's also turning the potter, which is also turning universal reality and the infinity of causes and conditions. It's kind of astonishing to think about it that way. We tend to think of Zazen or practice maybe as being passive. And we do need to appreciate receptive mind, as Kaz calls Jijuyu Sanmai. But it doesn't end there. Because along with receptive mind, there's also employing mind and enjoying mind. And it's this aspect that is connected to our engagement in the world and to our capacity to be of service in our lives. And we all know there's no shortage of opportunities to employ the self, to be of service in the world. I wanted to comment on something I read by Katagiri Roshi about patience and about standing upright, because I think for me they're connected to the Bendawa. And the first point is that being turned by universal reality requires patience. Our vision of reality is very limited. It's blurry. We don't really know the truth of things. So we can't be so sure of ourselves, and we can't be so arrogant. We have to be a little more humble. I know it's hard. And because universal reality is so much beyond our control, we also have to learn a little patience, or a lot of patience. The human world is sometimes referred to as the Saha world, and Katagiri Roshi says that Saha means patience in Sanskrit. I looked it up. It comes from the root in Sanskrit, comes from the word to bear or to endure. So when they translated Saha from Sanskrit into Chinese, they translated it as endurance. He calls it patience. But the idea is that the Saha world is one in which people are suffering. And that suffering has to be endured. And it's in that world that Shakyamuni Buddha makes his appearance and offers his teaching to all of us. So the human world is very messy. It's got lots of ups and downs. None of us has clear vision or control. So we need lots of patience. And Grail House this week is also the Saha world. We need lots of patience to be here. First of all, we need patience with our minds. We also, second, need patience with our bodies. Third, we need patience with our roommates and with our workmates, with our seniors, with our juniors. But Katagiri has an interesting comment. He says, to practice patience in the Saha world doesn't mean to suppress some feeling. It means to accept the whole universe. To practice patience doesn't mean to suppress our feelings. It means to accept the whole universe. So we could say in terms of Bendawa, to practice patience means the self receives the whole universe. And the other point is that turning universal reality with all things requires standing upright. And Katagiri Roshi talks about right acceptance as standing up straight under all conditions and to accept yourself as you really are and not in comparison to somebody else. Or we could say right acceptance is sitting upright. And I don't mean this literally. I don't mean we should adopt a stiff posture. When I hear talk about being upright in Zen, it always provokes in me a certain allergic reaction. And it may be because of the rhyme, but I don't think that being upright means being uptight. So I think sometimes slumping in Zazen is being upright, if that's what your body mind calls for in a given moment. You may have to throw away your posture. And when you throw away your posture, you may have true posture. So in this vast universe, so far beyond our powers of control or understanding, all we can do is to stand upright or sit upright, stand and walk forward one step at a time without knowing where the path leads. And when we do that, we can express and affirm the self and turn universal reality with all things. The self can employ and enjoy the self. So an example of this for me, I only exercise once a year. It's one of the great things about Ongo for me. We have some time built into the day to work out. And so the first day, I'm totally out of shape, and I really have only the most modest ambitions. And then the second day, my ambitions are a little greater. And the third day, I try to step it up a little more. But one day, I went on a longer loop than... it was a long loop for me. And at the end of it, I was at the bottom of Duncan Avenue, facing up. And usually, I love the uphill climbs. There's rarely an uphill climb that I don't like. I just put my head down, and I just go, even no matter how slowly. And so I tried to do that. And before I came on retreat, I had been out in California with some friends, and one of them is 92 years old, and he doesn't have a lot of strength. But he refuses, when he gets up to walk, he refuses to have anybody hold his arm. He refuses to use a walker. He does it on his own, and he takes these little steps like this. They're like Kinhin steps, and he breathes really forcefully. So that's what I was like growing up Duncan Avenue. And I also remember Roshi chugging around these hills years ago and around Wisdom House. And she told me that now she mixes the jogging with the walking. She has a new app to do this. And I thought of that. And so I've been trying to learn from my teachers. And so the better part of Duncan Avenue, I ended up walking rather than jogging. But for me, going up Duncan Avenue or going running requires a great deal of patience. And it also requires just staying upright and going forward one step at a time. Paso a paso, poco a poco. So here on retreat, we have lots of opportunities to practice patience and surrender and being turned, and lots of opportunities to practice standing upright and expressing the self and turning the Dharma wheel with all things. And in fact, we can do both of these things simultaneously. If we're running or walking or sitting, doing zazen, we can practice patience and surrender and being turned. And in zazen, we can also practice sitting upright and expressing the self and turning the Dharma wheel. The self receives the self, and the self employs, enjoys, expresses the self. Jijuyu Samadhi. Receiving the self, being turned by the Dharma, employing the self, turning the Dharma. And it occurred to me that this employment of the self is the same thing that Dogen talks about at the end of the Fukan Zazengi, which is the text he wrote just before Bendawa. He says at the end, "Your treasure, if you do this practice, your treasure store will open of itself, and you will be able to use it at will or enjoy it as you please." Our Shuso has asked us a couple of times, "Why did you come here?" And so I asked myself, why did I come here 20 years ago? And there are surely many causes and conditions that I'm not aware of. But what I would say is that I came here 20 years ago, first of all, because I realized that sitting was the only thing that really helped me with my mind. It was the only medicine that I have found. And the second thing is that I also had learned by that point that it's not easy to practice on your own, and it really helps to have the support of others. And the third thing is that I was also starting to realize that there's a lot that I could learn if I studied with someone who had more experience and who could teach me. Someone who could say, "No, the food offering comes from the first bowl, not the third bowl." Or someone who could help me see my blind spots a little bit more. "Roshi, I'm not sure what to do." "Well, what do you want to do?" "Well, I'm not sure what the right thing is." "I'm not asking you what the right thing is. I'm asking you what you want to do." Or those moments when she comes up and says, "Is your knee hurting? Here, I have some lotion for joint pain." But even with the support of Zazen and the support of Sangha and the support of a teacher, I have to say it's not always been easy. My mind continues to be a complicated place and causes me lots of trouble. I still have lots of snags in my daily life. And it's still a struggle for me how to balance the different parts of my life. Family, work, Bolivia activities, and what we do here together as Village Zendo. Even coming up here on Ongo after 20 years isn't such an easy thing to do. But I also asked myself, what would it be like if I hadn't come here 20 years ago and if I didn't have this practice? And my immediate reaction from this place is that I would have a huge, gaping, empty hole in my life. I shudder to think what my life would be like. But the truth is, I don't really know. I don't really know what my life would be like or who I would even be or how the parts of my life would fit together if I hadn't been doing this. In the end, I can say that I feel really fortunate and actually really happy that I've been here for the past 20 years. So we don't know where we're going to be next year. Actually, there's one more thing I wanted to share with you before we close. And I think I wouldn't give you this quote if we were at the start of session, but after a week of sitting, I think we can take it. I think we should turn off the audio and visual devices, because if people hear this, they might think that really we've gone bananas up here. Or as one person said to me, this is a form of mass insanity. It's okay.
Okay.
But this is another quote from Koto Sawaki. He said, "Being watched by Zazen, cursed at by Zazen, blocked by Zazen, dragged around by Zazen every day, crying tears of blood. Isn't that the happiest form of life you can imagine?" So who knows, a year from now we may be here, we may be somewhere else. And all we can do is stay receptive and stay upright and take one step forward at a time and go ahead paso a paso, poco a poco, without knowing where we're going to wind up. And if we want to do that, the best thing to do is just to give ourselves wholeheartedly to our practice right now. Or as our Shuso says, consider today the beginning. Thank you.